There is now no name before us. That's an abdication of the governor's responsibility under the law.
Lawmakers and the governor continue their fight over Senate seat B. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 15th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a tax day protest, even in the land of low taxes.
We've had enough.
If they're not upset, they're not paying attention.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards. Their mission is to advocate for children and youth by assisting school boards to provide quality public education, supporting student achievement and local governance. Information at aasb.org.
Governor Palin last night added another person to her list of candidates for the Senate District B seat representing Juneau, businessman Alan D. Wilson. Attorney General appointee Wayne Anthony Ross this morning said he agreed with the governor's decision.
The most important thing that can be done by the Senate is not argue what's legal or illegal, but to appoint somebody to represent Juneau.
However, a legislative attorney this morning presented a written opinion saying the governor's latest action does not follow the statutory requirement. The opinion points out that the governor resubmitted the names of two candidates that have been rejected along with Wilson's name and requested the Senate, quote, confirm one of them. The opinion says it is either a suggestion or unconstitutional by allowing three senators to hold the job. In either case, the opinion says the governor has not appointed anyone. Anchorage Democrat Hollis French requested the opinion and agrees with it. French says the letter is disrespectful to Juneau and the governor has stepped outside the law. He also had harsh words for the governor's appointee for Attorney General Wayne Anthony Ross.
To have an attorney general suggest that we disregard the law tells me very clearly that he is not fit for that office.
Anchorage Democrat Bill Wilikowski says the governor's letter does not prompt any action by the Senate Democrats.
In my opinion, there is no action for us to take. In my opinion, the law says the governor makes an appointment. It's up to the Senate Democrats to either confirm that appointee or not confirm that appointee. Because she has not complied with the law and made an appointment, there is nothing for us to do.
Later in the day, the subject rose to the Senate floor as French called the members' attention to the legal opinion, saying the governor should follow the law, and until she does, the Senate Democrats do not need to take any action.
And the reason why I do not feel that we can take any action in response to the governor's letter is that there is now no name before us. The statute is very clear. You must submit. You must appoint another qualified person. And there's been no appointment. There's been three names proffered to us and a suggestion that we select amongst them. That's not an appointment. That's an abdication of the governor's responsibility under the law.
The Democrats say, in their view, the governor still is working on a statutory deadline to get a new nominee to them by next Monday. In a letter distributed just a few moments ago, the governor clarified the intent of last night's letter. In it, she says she intended the nominees be considered individually, that Tim Grusendorf be reconsidered first, if he fails again, that Joe Nelson be reconsidered next, and if he fails again, that Alan Wilson's appointment be considered. She finishes with the statement, please act swiftly. The economic stimulus bill is one step closer to the governor's desk. The Senate passed the $450 million spending bill today with only a few changes from the version the House passed last Friday. The bill does not include any of the changes the administration presented yesterday that would replace state money with federal funds. It does not take any of the federal money off the table. Senate Finance Co-Chair Bert Stedman says the money is intended as one-time assistance statewide. He called it an attempt to get the stimulus widely spread around the state.
Clearly, for those that are in the smaller villages around the state, we do not want to leave them out. We're all Americans, we're all Alaskans, and we're all Alaskans first. And the intent here is that all Alaskans benefit from this package.
The bill passed on a 15-4 vote. The House must vote on whether to concur with the Senate changes. Then the package goes to the governor for action. There's no statewide income or sales tax in Alaska, but that didn't stop hundreds of people from holding protest signs and chanting "No more spending" on streets near the federal building in downtown Anchorage today. Dave McDermott, a 27-year-old government employee from Palmer, was among the large crowd. He said big business should not be bailing out bad business. Demonstrators across the country were having what they call tea parties today, wanting the government to stop deficit spending. In Kenai, KDLL's Ben Stanton spoke with a few protesters there.
At the intersection of Kenai Spur Highway and Bridge Access Road, about 20 people were holding signs saying things like "No money, no spend," "No bailouts," and "Read my lipstick, no more debt."
We decided to get out here with like-minded people and spread our word.
This is great. We're getting a really good response. We've got a lot of people. So far, nobody's been ugly.
That's Bill and Carol Keller. They think that the federal government is creating problems for the future.
Well, we're just voicing our opinion on the overspending in Washington and the fact that they're not listening to the folks anymore. And they're spending money that doesn't exist. And we're going to see some outrageous taxes in the coming years to pay for all of this.
The Kellers say that it's important to express their opinions to get other people interested.
It's just grassroots. It's just, I mean, he and I started the one in Soldotna, and we just kind of said, we've had enough.
If they're not upset, they're not paying attention.
Bill Keller also says that while he and his wife are Republicans, it's not about a party affiliation.
Matter of fact, we've got people that voted for Obama and Begich, but they don't like what they're doing. Now, we're Republicans, but we didn't like what Bush was doing. And, he's the one that started all this mega spending.
He says they worry that kind of spending is continuing with the Obama administration. The Kellers were part of a group going to Soldotna to protest at the intersection of the Kenai Spur Highway and the Sterling Highway. In Kenai, I'm Ben Stanton.
Senator Mark Begich has tapped Bethel's 24-year-old mayor to fill a newly created position. Mayor Tiffany Zulkowski has accepted a job as Begich's rural director. For member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson reports.
Zulkowski will start working as Begich's rural director later this month. Julie Haskett is Begich's press secretary. She explains the purpose of the new position.
The rural director will be Senator Begich's eyes and ears in Alaska, traveling around the state, talking to Alaska Natives and others about the many issues in rural Alaska today.
As mayor of Anchorage, Begich created a post for rural director. During his senatorial campaign, he said he would do the same thing if elected. Zulkowski is the youngest person to ever serve as Bethel's mayor. She is Yupik Eskimo and born and raised in Bethel. After graduating from Northwest University in Kirkland, Washington, she moved back to Bethel and was voted on to council overwhelmingly. That was in 2007. A year later, the council voted her into the mayor's seat almost unanimously. Begich met her last summer during his campaign. Haskett says they hit it off right away.
He just really admired her for what she had shown in her leadership skills and her investment in her community and how she really wanted to improve Alaska. And then when we were looking for a rural director, we reached out to her for some suggestions, and she indicated that she would be interested.
Zulkowski is moving to Anchorage to work in Begich's office. She stepped down from her council seat and is resigning her post as mayor. On Tuesday, she attended her last city council meeting via teleconference. There, she announced her resignation.
It has been an extreme honor to serve the community, and I look forward to my new role in continuing to work for rural Alaska.
Zulkowski is the second Bethel mayor to resign in 2 years. In January 2008, Mary Kinnick resigned from the post to accept a new job in Anchorage. I'm Shane Iverson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Anchorage wildlife manager reacts to a new city ordinance.
We can certainly use the help, and we're hoping that this person is going to be not a gung-ho, let's shoot and move the bear person.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The Anchorage Assembly voted last night to hire a wildlife safety specialist to help the city deal with nuisance and dangerous bears. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
In last night's public hearing, Phyllis Whitewater from the South Fork Eagle River area said she wanted mandatory bear-proof garbage receptacles as at least a partial solution to the problem. In response to a question from Assemblymember Debbie Osiander, Whitewater noted that garbage was not the direct cause when a bear charged some children.
It occurred because the brown bear killed a small moose calf and buried it in my yard. So the kids were playing in the neighborhood, not near the bear, but near enough to the kill site that the bear charged.
Okay.
They came out, and their advice was that we all stay in our houses for a few days.
That was the advice?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Dave Keddington testified he wanted to see the city take a more active role in bear control. He said the current system was inadequate.
No less than five times last year, you know, we had some type of a bear incident that was highly publicized. And even after the fifth time, we drug our feet for a couple more days before we finally took some action. So I'd kind of like to have my neighborhood back, and I'd kind of like to have my park back.
As passed by a 9-2 vote last night, the city manager will oversee a contract seasonal wildlife safety specialist who will address, rather than manage, the city's nuisance and dangerous bears, as well as develop municipal policies toward aggressive bears. That task would include looking at the impact of salmon stocking and land development policies. The wildlife specialist will launch educational programs and have the power to enforce trash policies, including, quote, proactive and corrective action toward repeat offenders. This is Len Anderson.
Anchorage area wildlife biologist Rick Sinnott with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game was surprised by last night's assembly move. He had been following the issue closely, attending every meeting since the assembly first took up the bear ordinance last October. But he wasn't there last night because he was told it wouldn't come up. He says he hasn't seen the ordinance, but he is happy that the idea of having the new specialist move bears out of the city or kill bears was not included.
To have someone who's one of whose job duties is to kind of go around town and shoot bears just because they're bears seemed like a bad idea to us.
Sinnott is one of just two people currently in charge of managing interactions between wildlife and humans in Anchorage, and he says it's too big a job for so few people.
We can certainly use the help, and we're hoping that this person is going to be a primarily enforcement, information, education, and perhaps bear hazing person, and not a gung-ho, let's shoot and move the bears person.
He says the bear problem in Anchorage is more about managing people than it is about managing animals. And he says, according to a survey and anecdotal information, most city residents want to have bears in town.
They don't want to have dangerous bears, but they want to have bears, recognizing that there's always a risk. And so you get a vocal minority that thinks that there should be no bears in town or that wants to have a hunt in town. You know, it's not just up to them. It's up to everybody. And so we try to manage it to make the most people happy most of the time. And obviously, it's always going to make some people unhappy. But we're not just there for the people who don't think that there should be bears. We're there for the people who think that there should be bears in town.
Sinnott says garbage is a big problem in Anchorage and is the single biggest reason bears wander into the city. He estimates a third of households in the city keep trash out all of the time. On the eve of board elections, a Matanuska Electric Association meltdown is pitting the utility's board of directors against long-term management. As APRN's Ellen Lockyer reports, two executives were fired without cause earlier this week, while the fate of a third is pending.
Ballots are in the mail to Matanuska Electric Association's 45,000 members, and it may be a close race with two challenging candidates hoping to unseat MEA board members Lois Lester and Kit Jones. In a surprise move Monday night, MEA's board of directors voted 4-3 to terminate without cause assistant manager Tuckerman Babcock and IT director Bruce Scott, while directing legal counsel to draw up papers terminating general manager Wayne Carmody. Babcock, a 10-year employee, manages MEA's engineering, human resources and operations divisions and its environmental health and safety division. Babcock points to the upcoming board election action as one factor in his firing.
This new majority has been in authority of MEA since last July and have not taken any action to replace management. And then here they are 2 weeks before an annual meeting where both President Lester and Kit Jones could be defeated, and they decide to make precipitous action.
Babcock says contributions made by his wife to board candidates opposing Lester and Jones could be behind his dismissal.
Now that I'm not employed at MEA, that I will be very actively supporting getting rid of these two incumbents who have been so destructive to the business arrangements at MEA. And, you know, in the first year under President Lester, the budget for the board of directors has gone up 300 or 400%, and it's just outrageous.
Scott, who had worked at MEA for 28 years, also contributed to challenging candidates. The internal tempest at MEA goes back 2 years when the utilities directors planned to build a coal-fired power generation plant in the Valley. A storm of protest by Valley residents killed that proposal and swept new members onto the utilities board of directors, members who don't really see eye to eye with long-established management policies. MEA purchases electricity from Chugach Electric Association, a fact which has placed the Valley utility on a tight deadline to find another supply because the contract with Chugach expires at the end of 2014. The crunch spurred MEA's plan to build a locally owned power generation facility. Now MEA plans to build a gas-fired facility near Eklutna. Babcock and Scott are suspended with pay until their firing takes effect in 2 weeks, but some MEA members stand by the board's decision. Kevin Brown serves on the Palmer City Council.
MEA's management does not work well with other utilities, and nor do they value working well with other utilities. We have a board now that believes in cooperation rather than litigation, and they're making great successes. I mean, and they're working together to put forward a set of proposals on unifying the rail belt to send to the governor and to the legislature. Nothing like that would have happened a year ago.
Board President Lois Lester was not available for comment on this story, as the MEA board has called a special meeting today to deal with the fate of Carmony. Babcock, who was hired by Carmony, says there will be no legal dispute over his firing if the board honors his employment contractual commitments. Carmony has run MEA for 14 years and has incurred some animosity over his preference for contract work over union labor. The MEA board recently approved a union contract with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers over Carmony's objections. For APRN, I'm Ellen Lockyer.
University of Alaska employees will see a substantial increase in health care costs beginning July 1st. UA Director of Benefits Mike Humphreys says rate hikes will take a bite out of take-home pay.
Some of the percentage increases on the UA Choice health care plan that the employees are looking at, they feel pretty large. Some of them have increased 50%, some of them have doubled.
Humphrey says the yearly contribution for a family of four on the standard health care plan will jump from about $1,000 to $2,000. The hike follows much lower increases in recent years. Humphreys says rising costs are catching up with the university, which is self-insured. That means there's no profit in the equation, allowing money paid into the system and not used 1 year to be carried over to the next. Humphreys says rising costs aren't the fault of university employees, who he says have done well to minimize their draw on the system.
A lot of that has to do with our employees making wise decisions, using more generics, and becoming more active in the maintenance of their own overall state of health.
Humphrey says UA health insurance still represents a good value when you consider that its costs are climbing at an annual rate of 10% compared to a statewide average of 15%. UA health insurance covers 4,200 employees and an additional 5,000 dependents.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the new AT&T, your world delivered.
One of the busiest rooms in the state capitol building now doubles as a tribute to thousands of Alaskan heroes. The Joint Alaska State Legislative Veterans Caucus yesterday dedicated a portion of the Betty Fahrenkamp Room to the Alaska Territorial Guard. Several walls of the room now feature photographs and other ATG memorabilia. Wasilla Senator Charlie Huggins served as MC of the ceremony.
As we think back in 1941, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor.
And then they started towards the United States, if you will, and they chose the Aleutian campaign to advance that cause. And that put at risk the state of Alaska, or the territory of Alaska.
And that, Huggins explained, is how the Alaska Territorial Guard was born.
Since the Japanese were down on Attu and Dutch Harbor had been bombed, Muktuk Marston got the calling from the governor and says, you know, we need to take care of ourselves and form our own defensive effort here. We didn't have a National Guard. We weren't a state. So there was formed the Alaska Territorial Guard, better known as the ATG.
From 1942 to 1947, 6,368 volunteers from more than 100 Alaska communities served in the ATG. Four of those volunteers were present at yesterday's dedication: Sigurd Olson, Ralph Kibbe, and Jacob Hendricks of Juneau, Sigurd Edwards of Yakutat, and Jim Osborne Sr. of Hoonah. After the men received certificates, boutonnieres, and personalized fleece vests, Jim Osborne thanked everyone for not forgetting the ATG.
You are all remembering all the old timers. I'll bet you anything in the world as you are making them happy.
Yeah.
I pray that we all love one another. Amen.
Thank you, Ms. Osborne.
Thank you.
In 2000, Senator Ted Stevens sponsored a bill ordering honorable discharges for all ATG members. Half a century after the war, the bill enabled these men and women to receive retirement, survivors' pay, and other benefits. In 2006, the Alaska Territorial Guard organization was established to locate the remaining ATG vets and make sure they received their newly granted rights. 24-year-old Shane Brown is among the oldest of Sigurd Edwards' 44 grandchildren. He says it's high time his grandfather and other ATG members received some credit.
Because the recognition was never formal. And so it's just like going to graduation and not getting your diploma, you know, and walking away trying to feel satisfied.
As it happens, Brown's grandfather did receive his actual diploma. The Alaska legislature awarded Sigurd Edwards the World War II Veterans High School Diploma in 2008. Edwards was 83 years old. Cruise taxes would fund projects from Ketchikan to Kodiak under the Senate's version of the state's capital budget. The measure proposes spending the largest amount of passenger head taxes so far. But some of the projects are drawing questions, and the tax could be challenged in court. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
A citizens' initiative passed by voters in 2006 established a $50 fee for every passenger on board a cruise ship sailing Alaska waters. Most of what's known as the head tax is supposed to be spent on projects benefiting the passengers as well as the industry, but the state has had some problems doing that. This year might be different. The Senate Finance Committee crafted a public works or capital budget, including more projects than ever before.
This is a year, especially compared to last, where there's very small capital budget, so everybody's clamoring to get their piece of the pie.
Joe Geldof is an author of the passenger fee measure and is following the projects list through the legislature.
The trouble with the cruise funds is it has to be spent, it should be spent, on cruise-related activities, wharfs, docks, you know, bus turnaround areas and stuff. So it's a real challenge to make sure we keep it, you know, consistent with the law and build good projects that make better tourism facilities.
Many of the 50 or so projects are easily linked to the ships. Cruise dock or tie-up improvements are slated for Juneau, Ketchikan, Hoonah, and Valdez. Other projects are on or near the waterfront. Haines gets restrooms, Skagway sidewalk work, and Seward passenger bus improvements. But others, while still targeting tourists, are farther afield. Wasilla gets train station work, and Fairbanks, Palmer, and Anchorage will see visitor center improvements. Geldof expects challenges on some projects. One is an infirmary and commissary for the animals at the Alaska Zoo. Lawmakers last year okayed 18 projects costing about $33 million, but Governor Sarah Palin vetoed half the list and more than half the money. This year, the governor proposed about $40 million worth of her own projects. Budget Director Karen Rehfeld says the administration's overall priorities are on infrastructure improvements and projects that address health and safety.
passenger-funded projects are a little bit different because of the overall umbrella that they really need to provide value to the visitors and to their experience here in Alaska because of the tax that they're paying. So we'll look carefully at the backup for the projects and certainly draw the connection between what these funds are going to be used for and the visitor industry.
Cruise lines and many other tourism businesses opposed the head tax when it was on the ballot. They said the state couldn't come up with enough projects to use all the money. The industry was relatively quiet during last year's budget process, but its opposition has been increasingly loud as leaders watch the worldwide economic downturn impact sales. John Binkley of the Alaska Cruise Association says the project list is up to lawmakers and the governor, but he says they need to be careful.
I think if you read the federal law, it indicates that it requires the money to be spent on a service to the passenger and the vessel. It's not or the passenger or the vessel, it's the passenger and the vessel. So probably the farther you get away from the dock and the ship, the more difficult it is to justify under federal law.
Some industry leaders have called for an end to the passenger fee to lower travelers' costs, and there's been talk of a lawsuit by the cruise lines, a passengers group, or both. The final list depends on what happens in the last days of the session, in the governor's office, and possibly in the courts. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
A web-accessible database being developed at the University of Alaska Fairbanks is aimed at helping Alaskans plan outdoor activities around the weather. John Walsh at the UAF-based Alaska Center for Climate Analysis and Policy says the site will synthesize historic temperature, precipitation, wind, and other data to aid in trip, event, and project planning.
Identifying your optimum windows based on historical conditions. Determine the time windows where you have less chance of rainouts or less chance of being frozen out.
Walsh says the information will be based on average past conditions, and there is always the possibility for aberrant weather during any single day or week, but that the database will give an idea of probable conditions. He says a survey and teleconference last week showed strong interest from outdoors people and a few builders who say the site could help plan weather and temperature-dependent work.
Things like pouring concrete, for example, require temperatures in a certain range and in the absence of precipitation. So it looks like those are going to be some early examples of how people are going to use this thing.
Walsh says the idea for creating the database arose from a graduate student project that looked at the expanding window for sightseeing due to climate change. Walsh says users of the new database will be able to narrow their search to more recent decades to better take into account effects of climate change. Walsh says the website should be available in about 6 months. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ben Stanton in Kenai, Shane Iverson in Bethel, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Rebecca Shear and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and by Comfort Suites Anchorage International Airport. Comfort Suites, an all-suites hotel, is now open with a 24-hour shuttle service, indoor pool, and high-speed internet access. Reservations at 243-8080.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.